part of the sort of my entrepreneurial approach to the business is where I really add the most value is designing products, innovative products, and there's certain criteria that we have to meet, which I'm, you know, really, really adamant on hitting, which is like styling is everything, right? Mm. Products have to work brilliantly, obviously.
Yeah.
But being innovative, accessible, and just brilliant looking is, I think, a really good mix. It's a really good recipe for a successful product. And so that's just what we try and do at Gosney. And I think we've been able to leverage like the engineering of the product through the way that we've designed professional ovens for the likes of some of the leading restaurants in the UK.
Yeah.
And so we've sort of leveraged that learning and that credibility into our consumer products and then just made them like highly engaging, really cool to look at. And they just spread, you know, they grow. So it's, you know, it's an amazing recipe.
And on today's show, I welcome Tom Gosney. This local success story to the Form area has been on my radar for a few years now, and when I saw the explosive growth they've had just from their latest crowdfunding campaign, I simply had to get him on the show and in front of the Screw It, Just Do It community. From getting kicked out of school in his teens, gave up drinking at the age of just 21, turned his life around and started a business with just £5,000 and an aim to earn £8,000 a month. Tom's Rock Box has made cooking cool again, portable pizza oven. They've got kids ditching their iPhones to create their own pizzas. And they've been fueling their extraordinary growth by having expanded into restaurants and hotels with the likes of Franco Manca now having their pizza ovens. He's had one hell of a journey. He's only getting going. I started off by asking Tom about the current campaign on Crowdcube at Startup.
We launched with a £500,000 target and we hit our target in 63 minutes. So it was just the uptake from our existing customers. You know, we just got such a cult following for our products. Yeah. And so we sort of warmed our customers up that we were going to be doing crowdfunding. Yeah. And then when we put it live, it went bonkers. It was amazing.
I was going to say how much of that, having spoken to, you know, a number of people over the years who've crowdfunded, how much of those were kind of ready to go?
So we did some networking with investors and like friends of the business, and so we were sort of teeing people up and sharing the investment deck before it was purely on the Crowdcube platform. £100,000 of the investment was from our existing investors, so we got private equity backed in 2017, and sort of the pool of investors that sit in the fund that have invested in us put £100,000 in. But we were really, really confident with the strength of our customer base and just the crowd. And there's just a really good feeling in the market for Gosney at the moment. You know, we're quite innovative. We're in a growing sector. And so we were really confident just to, you know, really accelerate it. So we had conversations with like friends and family prior to going live and secured a few, you know, a couple of hundred grand, something like that. And then we didn't really know how it was going to go when we went live. And then as soon as it went live and we got funded so quickly, sort of everybody started flooding in, and it was just, you know, it was amazing.
So what was the total at when you look at last? I guess you're literally looking at refreshing your phone every hour.
Do you know what? I was in the beginning, and now it takes so much time and planning to do a Crowdcube raise, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, Crowdcube. And so it was sort of months of work getting the pitch videos done, the investment decks done. And so it was like a very consuming process for sort of 2 to 3 months prior to going live. And it takes a huge amount of focus from the business. And so I'm quite relieved now that we've hit a level of success with it that I can focus on running the company again. Yeah. So I'm not, you know, I'm not stuck refreshing it like every 5 minutes. Yeah. I was in the first couple of weeks.
But once you hit the goal.
Yeah, once we hit the goal, we're in a really great place now. And so, yeah, we look at it daily and we still have lots of inbound questions from investors. Mm. And so we're still doing a lot of, like taking a lot of conversations with investors.
Yeah.
So my time is still sort of running the business now, but also having telephone calls with people that are putting more significant amounts into the business.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so that's compared to, what do you say the total was at now? Is that one?
So it's like, it's just shy of 1.5. Right, I think we're sort of 20K off 1.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that, like you say, that 100 grand, for example, actually is, you know, in the great scheme of things, a drop in the ocean compared to the tide of people who've like
it's been amazing. It's been amazing. Yeah. You know, we've had some really great conversations, and I think one of the most amazing things about it was just, you know, we've built a really good investment deck. We've got a really brilliant business, if I do say so myself. Mm. Massive global opportunity, and just the uptake on how excited people are about the company was just—it was like a real pat yourself on the back moment.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really come up for air when you're running a business, and for the last 8 years, I've just been sort of head down and just working really, really hard to grow it. Mm. And so, when you get a level of success that's validated by, you know, 500-600 investors that are just as excited about the opportunity as we are, it's just a really phenomenal moment in our journey. So it's been a really, you know, a really great thing to do.
It's funny, there's literally, I said to you, I was recording an episode before you came in, and that was one of the things I said, is that, you know, so many people are, you know, head down in the trenches, can't see wood for the trees, never come up for air and give themselves a pat on the back. But if you actually, you know, as of this Sunday, half the year is gone.
Yeah.
And even those who are probably thinking, you know, my life is dark, I haven't achieved anything. If you actually sit down and write it out and reflect back, you'd be amazed at what you actually have achieved this year already.
Yeah.
But it's actually acknowledging that.
It really is. And I think that's one of the hardest things. I think being entrepreneurial and being very driven to grow the business into something really large, it's, you know, you never really pat yourself on the back for the progress. You sort of, the challenges outweigh the progress. And so, you know, you have wins and you sort of enjoy it for 5 minutes, but, you know, it's really, and then you just head back down, you know, onto the next thing.
And are you clearly comfortable in the investment world? Is that something that you embrace? And were you, for example, like when you did the first raise in 2016, were you the main factor behind that, or do you get help with that from?
So 2016 was different. It wasn't an equity crowdfunding raise. So it was like Kickstarter.
Was it Indiegogo?
Yeah. Well, it was Indiegogo. So it was like a Kickstarter style. Everyone knows Kickstarter a little bit more than Indiegogo.
Absolutely.
So I sort of reference it to that. But you know, we launched Indiegogo purely because we'd invested. You know, we didn't have external funding from investors at the time. And you know, Rockbox, the product that we launched in 16, was incredibly expensive to produce. So the other ovens that we have within the range, we make them in the UK. We don't have big minimum order quantities. You know, we're not mass producing them. We sort of make them to order almost. And so it's quite easy from a cash flow perspective to run the business. When we sort of launched Rockbox, I put all my resource and all my funding into it personally. And we got to a stage where we'd invested maybe a few hundred thousand in it, paid for the tooling to get it manufactured. And then the challenge for us was, you know, we had £250,000 minimum order quantities just to produce like the first round of units. And we had 12 weeks lead time. So it took a long time for them to be produced in the Far East, get them over to England. And so it was really just a question where we'd been successful in designing the product. It took us sort of 2.5-3 years to design the product, prototype it, build it, reiterate it. And then we paid for the tooling and we were ready for mass manufacturing, but we just couldn't afford to fund the stock. And so it was really going to Indiegogo gave us the ability to fund the working capital required to fund the stock.
Right.
And so we gave consumers the ability to have a discount on the product on the basis that they would pay up front for it. We would get that working cap and then we would be able to place the orders and fulfill it to them 2-3 months later. And so that was really the view. And so there was no equity in that round. It was just a discount on a product for them backing the business in the early stages.
And was that, thinking back, was that like one iteration of the Rockbox? Or did you have like a bunch of different colours?
We had two colours at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a green and a grey, which we still have today. Although now we've gone through a CrowdCube raise. We've done a limited edition investor red version, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And so that's only for people that invest a certain amount of money in the CrowdCube raise. So they're like, you know, they're highly sort of elite exclusive ovens. There's only 100 of them made. And so, you know, it's just a really cool little sort of incentive for investors to get on board.
And what do you like most about raising through crowd?
Do you know, for me, it was really interesting. When we did Indiegogo in 2016, although it wasn't an equity raise, it just gave us a huge amount of PR. And, you know, Rockbox was really unique in the marketplace at the time. There were no portable stone ovens in the market at the time. And so we launched it. It was like a highly innovative, really good looking little product that just worked brilliantly. Mm-hmm. And so we launched it via there. And then it was truly validated when the product started dropping into the market and it just worked as we explained to people that it would. And so it just sort of erupted. I mean, we had the Daily Mail, the Telegraph, the Times writing about it. It was in GQ, you know, it just spread the internet. And that actually drove a huge amount of our growth. When we had limited marketing budgets before external funding, you know, that really gave us a springboard into a global market with Rockbox, which was phenomenal. And so this time going into the crowd, you know, there were a few reasons. It was, you know, it's a really great place to build advocates in the business. And so we can go and get 1,000 investors. They all become advocates of the brand. It gives us the ability to, you know, if we've got confidence in our ability to raise funds, you know, we get a great PR story off the back of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we work really, really hard to promote it. And so we get some great stories for PR as well. You know, like Mike Krieger, the co-founder of Instagram, invested. And so we had, you know, we got some PR around that, which was, yeah, it was amazing.
And how did you get to hear about that? Do you literally see the name, but you don't make the connection? Or?
So, no, we had no idea that he bought a product. You know, Mike Krieger, it's not, you know, it's not like Richard Branson, right? He doesn't come along and buy it and you spot the name and you're like,
yeah.
Okay, great.
You got that story as well.
Yeah, so Richard's actually having a one of the red rock boxes,
is
one of the investor rock boxes.
Of course,
yeah.
Well, of course,
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I sort of sent his PA Helen a message just to say, Helen, just to give you a heads up, we've got a Virgin red rock box now. You know, I'm sure Richard would love one, and so you know, Helen and Richard are having one. And so Mike actually bought a rock box. We didn't know that he had. And then he just started plastering it all over his Instagram stories.
Really?
Yeah. And so even if you go onto his Instagram page now, it's like the top story from last year. And so I actually just sent him an email saying, you know, I'm great to see that you absolutely love your rock box. We're actually going through a crowdfunding raise. You know, would you like to get involved? And he just came straight back and said he'd love to be part of it.
Yeah.
And so it was just, you know, great. Brilliant.
Was that literally just seeing yourself tagged in his Instagram stories? You know, that?
Yeah. Well, we weren't actually, he did tag us in it, but it was actually, as soon as he did it, I just had a sort of onslaught of private messages on my Instagram saying, have you seen Mikey sharing it? And,
yeah.
You know, we actually get it quite a lot with Rockbox. It's such a desirable, cool product that we've had, you know, we've had loads of influential people buying it and sharing it. So it's really great for the business.
Yeah. So powerful.
Yeah, it really is.
I was interested to know why you think it's been so popular. And I just, when I showed it to my kids, my two girls, they likened it to the Apple iPhone. I don't know if you've had that.
Yeah,
just like
so many times.
Yeah, I thought you might have done. It's just like that kind of, I mean, you said it, like desirable, you know, design-led technology.
Yeah,
just,
that's it.
People want to have it.
Yeah, I think I think the really interesting thing for me was, you know, when we designed, part of the sort of my entrepreneurial approach to the business is where I really add the most value is designing products, innovative products, and there's certain criteria that we have to meet, which I'm, you know, really, really adamant on hitting, which is like styling is everything, right? Mm. Products have to work brilliantly, obviously.
Yeah.
But being innovative, accessible, and just brilliant looking is, I think, a really good mix. It's a really good recipe for a successful product. And so that's just what we try and do at Gosney. And I think we've been able to leverage like the engineering of the product through the way that we've designed professional ovens for the likes of some of the leading restaurants in the UK.
Yeah.
And so we sort of leveraged that learning and that credibility into our consumer products, and then just made them like highly engaging, really cool to look at, and they just spread, you know, they grow. So it's, you know, it's an amazing recipe.
And you mentioned Richard Branson beforehand. True story, I read that you'd been out to Necker Island. Really?
Yeah.
When did you do that?
So that was a week before my wedding. And so I got married in Bali in 2016. And my wife, Laura, was really nervous about me going, because, you know, you go out to the Caribbean and in the BVI, all the flights are really unreliable.
Yeah.
And she was super. I had like a day's lag time to get back and get on a flight to go to Bali to get married. But it was an opportunity we just couldn't miss. And when we were leading up to the launch of Rockbox, we actually entered into the Pitch to Rich competition, which Richard
does.
Yeah.
Which year did you do? Was it 2015 or
2015? Yeah. No, it was 2015. And so that was the first time they'd run the Voom Pitch to Rich.
Mm.
And we did really well in it. Again, it was like a huge amount of work, like crowdfunding. But what that did for us is that gave us a bit of a platform to be able to show Rockbox to people. And then part of the momentum that we gained in that was just gaining customers' details and subscriptions when they gave their interest in Rockbox. And so we sort of entered the Pitch to Rich competition, and then on the back of that we sort of used that as a stage to leverage interest for Rockbox, and we sort of had 6 months till we launched on Indiegogo. So we just started like collecting lots of details for customers that were potentially interested, which is why when we launched on Indiegogo we just had such success with the with the campaign.
And was that when you spotted like the name Richard Branson put an order in?
So Richard, no, actually it didn't happen like that. We entered the Pitch to Rich competition and then we got through to the semi-finals, and you know, we sort of, it was a huge amount of work building the momentum in that and actually getting like friends and family to vote for us in the public voting round. And so we didn't gain as many votes as the people that we're up against, but we still had an amazing journey in that process. But Richard actually emailed me after the campaign, because we got to the semi-finals. He just sent me an email saying, really nice to have you involved in the campaign, in, you know, in the pitch to Rich. And so I sent him an email back saying, Richard, you know, you really need to get a Gosney oven on Necker Island. You know, Necker won't be quite there until you get a Gosney oven in Necker. And he just sent me a message back saying, connect up with our head chef.
Yep.
So he connected me to the head chef. Head chef just got given the green light to install one of our commercial ovens. And so, yeah, probably 6 months later, the Necker team flew me and my installers out to Necker Island, and we installed one of our commercial ovens on Turtle Beach, brilliant, which was amazing experience.
Yeah,
really cool going to Necker Island.
Yeah, I'll have to check. My friend Ben is DJ on Necker Island.
Oh, really?
All the jobs you get when you're like,
wow,
like that.
What a cool job.
And he was there when the hurricane hit.
Really?
He was in the wine cellar with Richard. He's in Richard's latest book. Actually, a picture of him like in the wine cellar. You know,
really?
From the... Yeah. So I'll have to check how the oven's doing for you.
The oven was still standing after the hurricane. It was like,
we
got a picture from a chap called Chris Kenny, who at the time was the head chef on the island, and it was amazing. He just sent me a picture, you know, obviously it was a complete tragedy with all the destruction that happened over there, but he sent me a picture and the oven was just, you know, carnage around it, and it was just stood there proud as punch. Yeah, but they are really big, heavy. But they're big heavy bits of kit, so you wouldn't expect it to blow away.
And did you get a couple of nights there then when you were installing?
So do you know what? It was actually funny. We got invited to one of the parties and we'd sort of flown out and we were working installing one of our commercial ovens. We had 3 days to install it because I was on such a tight time frame with getting back from my wedding. And so we were working in the insane heat on the beach with no shade, installing a commercial oven. So I was quite literally like absolutely knackered by the time. So we got invited to a party. I think there was a few interesting celebrities there, and we actually passed on it. We were so tired, but we had some tours around the island, and we met all the teams and went and did lunches and dinners and stuff like that. It was really cool.
It's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Life's all about memories, and that's one of them.
It was amazing. I was sat on the last day, I was sat on a beach on Necker Island writing my wedding speech from Necker. And it was really nice to be able to, we got the oven installed.
Were you really? Literally
literally wrote my speech for my wedding, sat on Turtle Beach on a sun lounger, just, you know, and it was one of those great moments when you can reflect and, you know, sort of absorb how far we'd come from a tiny little idea and building an oven in my garden to installing for Richard Branson and all of the achievements that we'd had. It was a great moment.
That is amazing. I'm sure there's been a few more of them since then.
Yeah, there has. We've had some great achievements. It's been a huge amount of hard work and determination, but it's been great. Yeah.
If you enjoy listening to podcasts and you feel inspired to start your own, you can get a copy of my free podcast launch checklist by going to podpreneur.co.uk/launch checklist. And if you'd like the hands-on help and support of myself and my team at my podcast agency Podpreneur, we've been producing podcasts with purpose internationally since 2019. Just drop me a line about your podcast idea to alex@podpreneur.co.uk. But if you prefer to do it all yourself, but with my guidance, you can join the waitlist for my upcoming podcast academy by going to podpreneur.co.uk/academy.
And interested to know, what was the vision back then, like when you were in your bedroom, for example, building?
So it was really funny. So the business began. It's sort of a lot more entrenched in my life than people may think. I had a relatively colourful set of teenage years, as you may have read in some of the articles. I won't delve into the details, but let's just say my life wasn't really in a great place. And I got booted out of school when I was young. I'm dyslexic, so I found it really hard to concentrate in classrooms. And so because of that, I just, you know, I acted up in school and I was quite naughty, and then, you know, kicked out of school, and then I don't want to say sort of got in with the wrong crowd. But, you know, there was a group of us that were just, you know, weren't leading a very productive lifestyle as teenagers. And so my life just really wasn't going anywhere. And at the age of 21, I knew I had so much potential and my parents were so supportive of me. And so I just decided to make a sort of massive change in my life at the age of 21 and just quit everything that I was doing. So I quit drinking at the age of 21, and which was tough. Quit partying, just completely changed everything that I was doing. And that was an amazing moment in my life. I went away to get help with that. You know, I went to South Africa and spent 6 months in SA. It's actually just shy of 7 months. I spent 7 months in rehabilitation in South Africa, and at the age of 21, and then I came back sort of highly determined to make my life a success. And yeah, it was like a really amazing journey for me back then. But coming back to the UK, being a completely different person, I've been sort of drinking heavily and partying since I was, you know, super young, like 13, 14. And I'd like reborn as this new person that, you know, that didn't drink and didn't do all the other stuff that I was doing. And that was a really tough transition for me back at the time. And so I had to come back and essentially learn how to conduct myself as a human, right? Without all of the stuff. Because, you know, it was all about going to the pub, hanging out with mates, going out partying, all that sort of stuff. And so coming back to the UK, it was like, well, how do I do all of that? You know, like, how do I socialize with my friends when it's not sort of centered around alcohol and going out? And, you know, at the age of 21 as well, it's really when people are getting started with going out and partying.
True.
And so I just took to hosting dinner parties for my friends. You know, I was forced to mature ahead of my time.
Yeah.
But I started cooking for my friends, and so I'd invite friends around for dinner. Oh, so I just got really, really into cooking. And then one evening, I decided to make homemade pizzas in my kitchen at home. And I was making pizzas for a few friends and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. And the pizzas came out of the conventional oven soggy and just, you know, a bit underwhelming. And I was, you know, I just immediately thought it would be really cool to be able to have a pizza oven in the garden. And so I jumped online to look at what was available in the UK market. And they were just all expensive. They were like £2,000 plus for these sort of brick ovens that you could, you know, either buy in kit form or get a company out to build them for you. And there was only a couple of companies doing them. And so I just thought, you know, I'm just going to build my own. And so literally the very next morning after pizzas, I said to my girlfriend, Laura, I'm going to build a pizza oven in the garden. And we weren't flush at the time. You know, I was doing laboring for friends. I was actually installing solar panels for a friend who had a solar company. And we, you know, we really didn't have any pennies to rub together at the time. And so Laura thought I was crazy that I was going to spend the little money that we had on building a hand-built brick oven in the garden. I just thought, well, I'm going to do it affordably. I'm going to build it myself. And I built the oven, and it completely transformed the way that I socialized. And as much as I was looking for ways to socialize with my friends, I built this sort of brick oven in the garden. You build a fire within it. You're sort of poking fire, cooking food next to it. And it was this primeval experience as a sort of boy in the garden, poking fire, cooking food. It was just awesome.
Yeah.
And so there was there was like a fire ignited. I found something that I was really passionate about. And so my friends that were coming round and enjoying, you know, I used to make dough, they used to bring toppings, and we used to stay up in the garden till like 2-3 in the morning, just eating pizzas, messing around with the oven.
Yeah.
And then friends just started asking me if I could build them for them. And so after like building a couple of hand-built brick ovens for friends, I just sort of saw an opportunity to try and design something that was more affordable for the UK market. And so after doing extensive research about how ovens were designed and built, sort of little concrete igloos, I suppose they are, you know, like little traditional pizza ovens, I got a £5,000 loan from my mum and dad. I spent £2,000 of that building a mold for my first oven that I designed. It was sort of, I had no idea how to design products, but I just researched it heavily. Sort of designed an oven, spent £2,000 on building a mold that needed to be filled to cast the oven. And then another sort of £2,500 on a website, and that's how the business was born.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was the ambition when the website went live?
So it was funny. I mean, when the website went live, and that was sort of 2011, August, we launched at the New Forest Show, and I had no idea what to expect. I was so naive to business. I had no idea about business. I had to teach myself how to brand, how to do marketing, how to do product design. It was really like grassroots stuff. I'd got no previous training. And so my ambition was to just, you know, I remember saying to Laura in the early days, like, if we could earn £8,000 a month, you know, that was my long-term life ambition, you know, to grow the business. I didn't even know at the time that we would have a range of products. It was really like build one affordable product for the UK market. There was no business plan. There was no real sort of, there was no true vision in turning it into something that it is today. It was really just a question of like, I don't want to work for other people. Yeah. I'm highly determined. I'm really driven. I had no idea how ambitious I really was at the time. And I had no idea that I was as entrepreneurial as I am. And I, or, you know, had the eye for designing products like we do.
Yeah.
And so we launched it, and yeah, my main goal was to try and earn £8,000 a month. That was like, that would be like the golden ticket for me at the time. And so we launched the business and just worked really, really hard on growing it.
And just the two of you at the time.
So it was me in the very beginning, and then Laura quit her job in London, and she was sort of commuting to London in the week, and we were living in Bournemouth. And sort of 6 months into me running the business from our spare bedroom. She joined the business, and then we basically ate baked beans on toast for 2 years and had no money and just worked relentlessly to sort of build the brand and, you know, like sort of blogging and writing articles for landscaping blogs and stuff like that, talking about the Stone Bake Oven Company, which was the first brand that we launched.
Right.
Just to try and build some awareness. And we just did it, the two of us, just like day in, day out, relentlessly slogging on trying to build the business.
What was the hardest thing, all those things that you had to learn to do yourself, from design to then like the business's branding, marketing? What did you find the hardest or biggest challenge back then?
Not having any previous experience in anything was just, you know, learning everything on the job.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, naturally I'm good at sales and marketing. That's my sweet spot. And, you know, I didn't know at the time, but I'm good at identifying how to design products that sort of fit a need for the market, you know. And like the first part of experience I had around that was just my requirements when I was looking for a pizza oven.
Yeah.
And then looking globally at what all the competitors were doing, and then just designing something that brought all the unique selling points from everybody else together into one product that was accessible to a wider market. So that was the benchmark for really identifying product. I think running the sort of finance function, the operational function, it's just not my strong point, being in the detail. I'm sort of quite high level, love strategy, vision, product design, touch and feel stuff in the visual.
So totally right to that.
Yeah, and branding, marketing, and everything like that is my sweet spot. Being in an Excel spreadsheet isn't.
Yeah.
And so that was a challenge for me. And I suppose trying to like build a range of products, the amount of money that you invest in R&D whilst trying to protect P&L and not waste money when you don't have any external funding, that was a challenge. And so I took us very close to the line so many times with being overly ambitious to try and get new products out when we couldn't really afford to do it. And so there were some nail-biting moments. Well, every year there's been nail-biting moments for us for the first sort of 5-6 years of our growth until we got to a level of momentum that we did. And then different challenges arise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm chatting to the, the Candy Kittens sweet brands with Jamie and Ed, and they, you know, so many times they've come so close to not being able to make payroll back in the early, you know, and when you hear that from somebody that's now got a national about to go, you know, international, well, they are international actually, but they're about to launch in the US now, you think, wow, people can relate to stuff like that. Everybody can relate to stuff
like 100%.
That. That's really interesting. And what kind of growth did you see from year one, from year two? Was it slow, or was it like just explosive from this? Because now you're in the explosive growth stage.
We are. I mean, it's been interesting. The first sort of 2011 when we launched, I was expecting to turn the website on and it to just fly. You know, that was how naive I was.
Yeah.
And it didn't do that. And, you know, so it was slow for the first year or so while we were building brand and sort of building awareness. And then we started to gain momentum. The Stone Bake Oven Company, we'd sort of built a range of 3 or 4 ovens by the first couple of years, and we worked really hard getting ovens into sort of influential gardens. You know, we sort of sold ovens to Sarah Beeny, the Hairy Bikers, and so we were leveraging that.
Yeah.
And then just started to get momentum. We'd learned how to do SEO ourselves, and so quite quickly we were ranking at the top of Google. And then Jamie Oliver decided to start selling pizza ovens, which at the time I thought was catastrophic for the business. I really naive and inexperienced. I just thought it was going to end us, but actually he was just getting on TV cooking in wood-fired ovens every night of the week.
Yeah.
And so we had a high quality quality British made product, and Jamie Oliver was doing the marketing for us. And so in the early stages, we saw a lot of growth through just the awareness that Jamie was building on TV, and which was amazing. And so it was, you know, a little bit of luck in the mix, but we sort of spotted an opportunity for what I felt was going to be a you know, a great market. And don't like saying it, but like there was a gap in the UK. Like, no one was doing it. It was like wood-fired ovens and pizza ovens were rife in Australia, in Europe, but, you know, in America, and just nothing in the UK. And I think the market is shifting into outdoor cooking now and outdoor eating, even though we have quite poor weather here. So it was just, it was a good bit of vision, right place, right time. And then Jamie helped a little bit in the early stages because we just had no marketing budgets. It was really us just blogging and doing all the stuff that we did. And then in answer to your question, Alex, I think the growth, you know, after the first couple of years, we've just had brilliant growth. We sort of averaged over the last 5 years, 50%, you know, 50% average growth rate year on year. And that's down to innovating in new sectors and just basically building the brand awareness for the company. So we launched Stone Bake in 2011 and then moved into the commercial space in sort of a little bit earlier than 2013, but I innovated a sort of patented modular installation system for commercial ovens, which we launched in 2013. And so all giant wood-fired ovens that you used in restaurants, they were only sold as like one finished article that came straight out of a manufacturing facility. So restaurant owners were having to take shop fronts down, use cranes to lift them in. They're like 2 tons, 2 meters in diameter. And so I saw a great opportunity to design a modular installation system that we could walk through a doorway and assemble in one day. And so I just sort of turned, whilst Laura was then managing Stonebake and the growth of Stonebake, I focused my energies and my innovation on the commercial sector. And so we designed the sort of modular system to install in restaurants. And then when we launched that, we became DEFRA exempt as well, because we put a huge amount of our energy into the efficiencies of our ovens, making them work with low fuel consumptions and things like that. And so we launched, we became the only company in the UK to have DEFRA certification under the Clean Air Act, which meant that we had a certificate to go and install in central London. And we had this modular installation system. And so we launched that, and then it just flew. The commercial oven business flew. And we started landing people like Pizza Pilgrims, Frank Amanka, Home Slice, you know, some of the really sort of artisanal leaders in pizza in the UK.
And what kind of split do you have then between the like B2B and the B2B
market? Currently, Rockbox is growing exponentially. You know, we've had an international compound annual growth rate for the last 2 years of 148%. So that's really flying internationally. Yeah, I mean, when we launched, the US attributed to 50% of the revenue from Rockbox without a marketing function there. It just flew, absolutely flew. And so now the split, you know, Rockbox makes up just over 50% of the company's revenue. But it's the only product that's currently international.
Right.
And so the, you know, the Stonebake line of products and the commercial oven business is just UK focused at the moment. But part of what we're doing with the Crowdcube raise is to A, launch a new line of what we feel are going to be highly disruptive consumer products, which we're so excited about. And it's to take all of our existing ranges into our proven market. So we're currently recruiting to build out a management team in the US now. And then we're basically building the infrastructure to take our commercial ovens and our premium domestic and our sort of fast moving consumer products to the US in its entirety and Australia.
And up to date, so what I've read is that, like, you know, how you've been able to manage the growth. 25,000 ovens, 42 countries, is that kind of right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great. It's so cool.
So is USA the biggest market for you?
I think, well, yes, singularly, I mean, being the size of Europe, it's just an English-speaking, highly outdoors, huge population. It's clearly a massive opportunity for us. Mm. Although, you know, Europe is huge, you know, our products, Rockbox and the new line of consumer products, well, all of our products, really, you know, we've got innovation built into everything that we produce at Gosney. So we've got great opportunities on the professional side in the US market, the UAE, you know, the EU and Australia. Mm. The consumer side is just a vast opportunity, you know, the US predominantly being the front runner for the opportunity.
And the thing I always point out to people, like one of my closest friends down here has one in his garden, and then we always say, like, the best pizza you can ever get anywhere is literally making yourself outdoors there. And again, it's, you know, that thing about fire, poking said fire, and you know, the sky, you know, starry sky above you, all of that. But you know, he's a Kiwi, and maybe it comes from that. But he cooks everything in it.
Yeah,
like the roast in there.
Yeah.
Whereas people in this country probably a bit more, I don't know, narrow-minded, but maybe just haven't been told. Do you know what? You can actually cook pretty much anything in it.
Yeah, I think one of the opportunities that is just vast for us is, we view our products as, you know, they're not pizza ovens, they're outdoor ovens, and there's a massive opportunity with a sort of 7.6 billion outdoor entertainment market in the barbecue space. We feel that we can really carve a share from the barbecue market. You know, is it one of our investors, Simon, uses this interesting analogy that, you know, there's a real split between what you can get in the casual dining sector. Let's just say within London, sort of 33% pizza, 33% burger, and these are quite broad terms, 33% other, you know, tapas, Thai, Indian, whatever.
Yeah.
And actually the outdoor dining market at the moment is just 100% meat, because the tools you get to cook is a barbecue.
Yeah.
And so we want to bring some long overdue diversity into what's predominantly, it's huge.
Yeah.
And so it's really educating the world that we can roast in our ovens, we can slow roast, but we can still do what, you know, we can grill like in a barbecue.
Yeah.
And so we can cook amazing vegetable dishes, whole pigs in our bigger ovens. You can do some, I think the interesting thing for me that got me super engaged in the early stages was just, you know, gone are the days of it being dad in the corner with an apron cooking the sausage, burning the sausages with smoke in his eyes.
Yeah.
And no one's interested, right, in huddling round the barbecue with dad. You know, but when you like Rockbox or one of our pizza ovens, everybody wants to play with it. Everyone wants to open their own dough, make their own pizzas, cook their own pizzas. 60 seconds to cook, that sort of instant gratification for the kids putting down their iPhones and getting off social media for a second and actually getting involved with the family. That, for me, is the big opportunity. It's the lifestyle that our products can bring to gardens.
I think you've nailed it there. Yeah. And that community that you can build around that with your, you know, extended family, friends. We all go around there and they, you know, they've literally, you know, got all of the, and you said the kids will ditch the phones and they're literally headfirst into picking what they want to put on their pizza.
Yeah.
And again, roasting vegetables on a tray in there, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's just a great process for everyone to be involved in. Yeah.
And kind of wrap things up, because I'm sure you're ridiculously busy at the moment. How much of an first of all, where did you come up with the name Rockbox then? Was that just one of those?
So my wife named it. And like there's no, you know, quite literally it was a stone in a box. It was a, you know, Rockbox was a stone in a box. And part of the criteria for designing Rockbox when we set out to design it was it had to fit in a certain size box and it had to be under a certain weight.
Right.
And so the rationale behind designing it was that we needed to be able to ship it anywhere in Europe for less than £10. And so it had to come in less than 25 kilograms and fit in a box of a certain dimensional size.
Oh.
And so really we were talking about the box as part of the criteria, and Laura was doing the naming process and she just came up with the name Rockbox and it sort of stuck.
And it stuck well.
It stuck well. Yeah. It's, you know, it's sort of
combine that with the design that you have and that desirability, and you've it's a hell of a sweet spot to be in.
Yeah, it really is. And we're super excited about all the new innovation that's coming in the space as well. It's going to be really exciting. It's an amazing opportunity to be part of the journey in the business. Mm. All investments obviously carry risks, and so I wouldn't be doing my job properly if I didn't say that on here. So you guys need to research about investing through a CrowdCube platform if you want to get involved. But you know, we're really excited about the company's growth, and we think we're going to achieve amazing things.
So you should. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Alex. Cheers.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, can I encourage you to follow the show by clicking the plus button in the top right-hand corner of your screen if you're listening by Apple Podcasts, or the follow button on Spotify and other platforms. It means you'll be the first to be notified whenever a new episode goes live. Did you know that nearly half of podcast listeners find the show through searching online? So if you've gotten any value at all, please share this episode with one or more of your friends and make it easy for them to find a podcast you think they'll enjoy. If you'd like to join the Screw It, Just Do It community, go to podpreneur.co.uk/get in touch to sign up to our weekly newsletter and free resources. That's podpreneur.co.uk/get-in-touch. That's podpreneur.co.uk/get-in-touch.